importance of reopening the hearing. Morning, Mr. Gordon.
Mr. Chairman.
Before I ask you to introduce your case, I have a couple of questions. The evidence that's been handed up, is there any different from what was pre-circulated?
That's a very good question.
Because of it?
It's identical.
I'll put it on the floor. That's good. Well, I've got all of my iPad.
Well, we weren't sure whether we should provide hard copies, but the minutes indicated we should, so we ended off some effort, particularly Mr. Craig's visuals.
The visuals are vital, thank you.
Right.
That was the second thing. Thank you for those. And we're supposed to do site visits on the 27th, so that will be very helpful.
Right.
The third thing is I understand that the structured plan is held by either John Edwards' assistants or Milbrook or someone of that nature.
When you say held, Mr. Chairman, do you
mean the data set?
The data set, yes. That's also a very good question. It actually may presently be with Baxter's.
Well,
with Baxter's design,
right.
But there is a need that we recognise and acknowledge to
get it to the council.
Not only get it to the council, but to get a survey. What's the expression, Mr. O'Connor? A geo reference CAD file. So that the activity area boundaries can be very accurately identified.
Yes. Can I give you the same message that I gave to Ms. Baker Galloway in respect of the Jack's Point one?
Yes.
The hearing panel would very much like to have that data set on the council's GIS, because if we weren't able to make any alterations or changes to it, we're certainly not proposing to go to Baxter Design or John Edwards and Associates.
Yes,
to have that done.
Yep.
The second point is some of those building platform signs are a bit like some of the ones at Jack Point. They're like little amoebas scattered around. And yes, the good references for the polygons, that might be very helpful, even if they became dependent to the map, so that people can see the planners actually have that information to hand.
Certainly, and that's all available. The creation of the simulations that are attached to Mr. Craig's evidence are survey accurate.
Right.
Considerable work has gone into that, as you would imagine, and as is necessary for sensitive neighbour issues such as this.
Yes.
So all of that information has been gathered together to create accurate simulations, and it can simply be provided to the council in an appropriate way.
Yes, the only question is going to be whether the programs are compatible. That,
right.
That, I think, can be dealt with one way or another. But there is sort of it would be useful if it was done correctly rather than slowly.
Yes. Right. And we get a message that we
perhaps if Mr. Edmund could liaise with Ms. Law on that, rather than Ms. Evans, but Ms. Evans is a consultant, whereas Ms. Law is in the council, and we'll be able to talk to the right people there. Thank you.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners McLeod and Nixon. I'm Ian Gordon. I'm legal counsel for Millbrook. I'm flanked by John Edmonds, who you probably know, Andrew Craig, who you may know, who's a landscape expert, and Ben O'Malley from Millbrook Resort on his right. And in the chief seats is Ms. McDonald for X-Ray Trust, making sure that I don't say something I shouldn't. And I can say right at the outset that we've worked closely with Ms. McDonald and her clients and their consultants since we received their submission. And that work has been ongoing so as recently as about 10 minutes ago and has now involved, of course, Ms. Evans and Ms. Ayres. And in accordance with the Environment Court Practice Note conference, you may be pleased to hear that they are within a whisper of agreeing on final provisions. And that hopefully is good news as far as you're concerned. Of course, it has to receive your approval, but.
But a joint witness statement is always very helpful.
Well, we're almost there, according to you.
Even if there are a few little crinkles that are disagreement that makes life so much easier.
Yes, yes. Well, I have to hand it to Ms. McDonald and her people and Mr. Craig and Mr. Evans. They have worked really hard, and as with the council consultants too. So it's been a pleasure to sit back and watch from my perspective. Of course, did prepare some submissions, a synopsis of submissions, which I distributed yesterday.
Yes, I've certainly read them. Just looked at some of this.
Oh, thanks.
I've
got hard copies here, which you may or may not want. So I won't distribute them if you don't need them.
No, I don't.
I won't read them. Let's take you to some points. If I can just address item two on the first page, it'll be clear to you from the section 32 material that the aspiration is to get to a 36-hole international tournament quality resort for international quality tournament play and to raise the standard at Millbrook to that level of golf tourism. That is the gold star for international golf tourism. And that's why they purchased the Dalgleish land. I consulted with the council about the best way of rezoning, and council suggested that we involve the process and the plan review, which was coinciding. And as a result, the Millbrook consultants prepared most of the Section 32A material. I've referred to the Integrated Trust submission, there's also the Donaldson submission, and in response to those submissions, the revised structure plan and set of provisions was prepared, and it's our position that significantly reduces the effects raised by those submitters, and it was prepared and lodged on 7th of December 2016. That's involved redesigning the earthworks and contours around the Gulf, particularly on the upper plateau part of the Dalgleish land. When you visit there, you'll see exactly what I mean, because there is an escarpment running through part of the site, so there's the lower land and the upper land, and the sensitive area in terms of the Integrated Trust and Donaldson is the activity that's proposed for the upper part. So that was significantly, Mr. Baxter redesigned the contours and with the help of Virtual View and very specific housing forms, they determined how that those residential activities could be rearranged and shrunk and pushed to the middle of the site so that the potential visual effects would be diminished. sides, particularly from the East Road Trust and Donaldson's side. In fact, the virtual views that Mr. Craig will speak to demonstrate that visibility of dwellings is now reduced to one or two chimneys and possibly the top of the roof. Those effects are able to be very carefully managed. And in that sense, I think you can be satisfied that this landscape can really can truly accommodate this level of development. So you'll find that it's on that basis that Ms. Evans has recommended that the East Road Trust submission be rejected because the proposed provisions now meet its concerns. That, of course, is slightly double-edged sword. Acknowledgement you had from East Road Trust is on the basis of what was offered up on the 2nd of December. And then, as you may realise, Ms. Evans suggested that the guidelines sit outside the standards and rules sit outside the zone provisions. And we, together with East Road Trust, pushed back on that because we felt that it was imperative that those provisions were within the zone. And I think you heard from Ms. Evans on Tuesday that she's now satisfied that they can come back into the zone provisions. And that's where the plans have got to. And so there's no question of guidelines sitting somewhere where people can't access them.
Is it also that it's actually the X-ray trust submission that provides the scope for the amendments?
Correct.
So then allowing it in part is required if we were to accept the amendments.
That's right. That's why X-Ray Trust have agreed not to withdraw this submission, still since then, to provide that scope.
Yes.
So that's all I wanted to say in relation to the first page. The second page, I should say that I've asked Mr. Redmond just to speak to where, rather than read his evidence or in the summary of his evidence, I've asked him to. So just update you on where the other plans have got to. Similarly, Mr. Craig will summarise where he's got to with Ms. Ayres and speak to the visual material. And Mr. O'Malley is really here for any specific questions you might have about how the small special zone operates and its intended that it continue to operate. It's not intended that he particularly speak to what he's prepared.
Right, that's fine.
If that works. So, turning to the law, which I know from my field notes I'm required to only speak to, this first page really just introduces the section 32 test, which are so well known to you that I'm almost embarrassed to mention them. But the case I refer to there is a local case, Larkin, Queensland Lakes, involved Barrowtown South. In fact, it was a decision of Judge Jackson's.
All across the road.
Yes, absolutely. Mackinac Road. Ms. McDonald and I were involved in that, but Judge Jackson, and I think we call it a draw at the end of the day. But Judge Jackson helpfully set out the principles as he previously enunciated them in the High Country Roadside Orchards case. And I set them out there. I don't intend to take you through them, but you might find it helpful that I have. That takes us to page 3. And paragraph 13, I remind you that section 32 requires a value judgment as to what on balance is most appropriate when measured against the relevant objectives. I say that that's not new, because the approach the Environment Court has consistently been taking, and as evidenced by those four cases, which you may be familiar with. The first one is the first enunciation. I think it was Judge Shepherd who was Gisborne. The next two are Judge Jackson. Of course, Long Bay is the epiphany on section 32 assessments.
It's a four-page list.
That's right. I haven't got a particular page reference to refer you to, but I'll find it if you'd like it.
No, please. I was actually a little sitting on my
side. Oh, right.
Reasonably well.
Yeah. Waterfront Watches, a Lansing case, and Judge Thompson dealt with Section 32 in one paragraph.
Yeah. I like that approach.
Yeah, so do I. So I always cite it. I was on the right side of that case too, so that's a good reason to remember. So it's no surprise that I submit to you that your task involves an overall value judgment as to whether a proposed policy appropriately achieves the objective. There's only one objective in this zone. And whether methods, rules, standards, and assessment matters enable successful implementation of the policies. And I just have included reference to the Colonial Vineyard case, and that's a reference to the Environment Court judgment, which was a judgment of Judge Jackson, when he reminded us that most appropriate in Section 32 suggests a choice between at least two options, or grammatically three. In other words, comparison with something does appear to be mandatory. And in this case, the choice is between continued general rural zoning for this established land.
Does raise the question, of course, if you're in a situation you're hearing something and there's no submission, what are you testing it against? But we won't worry about that.
Yeah, well, I suppose existing provisions, in the operative plan, I think that's what Judge Jackson was really steering us at in the Colonial. That's where you start. He certainly took that view in the Monk case as well. And so I say here the choices between rural zoning with rural activity for the Dalgish land or golf tourism in terms of the Millbrook Resort Zone. They are clear choices. And that, of course, is comprehensive development pursuant to a structure plan, and which you're hearing from me and from others has been the subject of some considerable rigour. And in paragraph 17, I refer there to the final word on the Part 2 purposes and principles of the RMA being set out between paragraphs 21 and 30 of the Supreme Court's decision in King Salmon. And I say that no other interpretation is now available. The great thing about those 9 paragraphs or 10 paragraphs is they're really readable and accessible. And I've got a couple of copies here if you'd like them. I can hand them up later.
Bedtime reading.
Yeah, well, it's surprising how lawyers who become Supreme Court judges can so clearly enunciate what we've been reading for years since 1991 with much success. And so at 18, I say that the 3 planning witnesses, Ms. Evans for the council, Ms. Taylor for the Beach Road Trust, and Mr. Evans for Millbrook, each conclude that the revised version of the Millbrook Resort Zone Structure Plan and revised provisions is the preferred outcome for achieving the purpose and principles of the Act and the requirements of Section 32. Now, I understand that no alternative expert view is to be offered up, and what I'm saying there is that I understand that the Donaldsons still wish to be heard tomorrow, but that they're not calling any evidence.
Certainly none of the problems.
That's what I've been in touch with Mr. Todd, and that's the view that that's as clear as I should say. It's in my page one, I skipped over it, that we at Millbrook has a very good relationship with the Donaldsons. It has resolved by agreement all issues with that neighbour our previous expansions in 2007. In terms of where they're at with this one, because the Donaldsons reside in the USA the majority of the time, it's difficult to meet face to face with them, but they're here now, and considerable progress has been made by Mr. O'Malley and Mr. and Mrs. Donaldson, and draft agreement was exchanged as recently. piece of things last night, and whether that keeps us where we need to be by tomorrow, who knows, but we are continuing goodwill, good faith discussions to try and resolve it.
Can I just ask for clarification, are the Donaldsons, or do you know if they're one of the mapping submitters that are seeking changes to the space of their own land?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Especially after my amendment to their submission.
Yes.
It was implicit, but now it's explicit.
Yes. Yes, they are. They seek either a Millbrook resort zoning or a rural lifestyle zoning, but they're not, there's no detail as to what that would be in terms of rural lifestyle zoning. There have been historic discussions as between Millbrook and the Donaldsons as to the possibility of 15 dwelling sites on the Donks land in a rural lifestyle comprehensive development. But that hasn't been advanced in any Section 32 assessment for the purpose of the mapping hearing as a follow-up next hearing.
The reason I ask that question is it's quite a strong emphasis on integrated development to the objective policy framework in the plan, and sort of keep me in the back of my mind there whether people are doing developments around the edge or on the line. If you've got a development, I want one too, which might be fine now if there is a degree of integration between them rather than everybody doing their own thing kind of exercise.
Well, Millbrook's open to that, subject to the detail and the access to the Donaldson's property. There are two access ways. They both go through Millbrook.
Not from the south.
Not from the south. So there could be some sensible integration in due course, but there hasn't been any work done to fulfill that process yet, as far as
One other thing I want to ask you, obviously put a lot of effort into looking at Section 32 implications here.
Yeah.
I don't know whether King Salmon actually alters that very much, but it seems to me, well, I had always understood that formally, that Section 32 is about a process whereby you have to justify the nose rather than the eyes, as one of my colleagues once famously put it. So, given this is a, what could be described as a liberalising submission, in other words, the degree of regulation is actually reduced from going from rural to golf course, at least arguably so, that the Section 32 burden is somewhat less in those circumstances. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, two things to cradle say that, some of the open space qualities of rural zone are paralleled in golf development, and the whole essence of Millbrook is that the openness and the access to use of ONL and ONE features is critical to the success of design and the entire golf experience. Sort of a roundabout way of answering that.
Okay,
that is what I'm thinking. So I was at 18 and I moved into 19 and I just set out there why, as I say, you can rely on Mr. Edmonds, Ms. Evans, and Ms. Taylor. They've grappled with these issues. They've taken a holistic approach as to effects of the modified proposal. They've taken an outward-looking approach to assessing effects beyond the Douglas South site. They've relied on independent landscape experts. So their sensible acceptance that the purpose of the legislation achieved by rezoning from rural to Millbrook resort zone is scope for a sensible golf and tourism development which respects the surrounding landscape. So I then go on to say the only major issue between them is the methodology to be adopted to ensure that enabled golf residential landscape components conform the recommendation of the landscape experts, and I brought said this, that the design component should sit inside its own rather than outside the plan and guidelines. That's where they've got to, and Mr. Edmonds will confirm that. All three plans are now down to issues of formatting and final tweaks as to that, and Mr. Edmonds will update you. I think Ms. Edmonds' view as at this morning is that it's still a working draft, but it's almost perfect. Perhaps I can move now to paragraph 24 and the Donaldson's submission. And to leave what I'm going to say now, I'm saying in case there is no final agreement to whatever, first and foremost, I note that the submitting has modified the submission. I leave the panel and the group reserves its position in respect of that change. That's just technical formality. I don't think you need to be concerned about that. I'm not suggesting that there's any particular prejudice, but we weren't given the opportunity, for example, to file for this submission on the submission once it was changed. So technically, there could be some prejudice, but I'm prepared to turn a blind eye to it in the meantime. I've already said that they're not calling any experts, but I understand that they do want to speak tomorrow if we haven't reached agreement prior. I reiterate that Millbrook respects their situation and has historically worked with them to resolve concerns, and that considerable goodwill remains. If an argument is to be made for the Donaldsons, I anticipate, this is my paragraph 27, that their argument will be along the lines that effects on them should not be assessed only in terms of impacts on their single consented building platform, and further that Millbrook is somehow stopped from approaching their assessment of effects on anything short of 15 dwellings in locations yet to be determined. Basis of resource consents or zoning consents yet to be determined. And there I'm simply referring to the prior agreement that Millbrook wouldn't oppose a sensible rural lifestyle development of up to 15 dwellings on the Donaldson land. That was the agreement that was reached in 2007. And they say that, well, because of that agreement, we have to assess the effects on our land on the basis that those compact buildings might be in place. We say, well, actually, it's too early for that because we don't know, we've got no idea where those buildings might be, how they might be designed, what landscape mitigation might occur. There's just no detail on that at all, and that the only certainty you can have is the present landform with one present building platform on it, which happens to be so far to the east and behind the bridge that you can't, because there's no visual connection between that building platform and the Dalgleish land. Now, the law on this is it's in my favour in my submission to you. There's another Queenstown case that I refer to here called Foodstuffs. It was an appeal from a decision of Judge Jackson's to the High Court, and Justice Fogarty was dealing with a situation where some resource consents, and it was actually an appeal of Judge Horton's decision, but Judge Jackson had granted consent for a supermarket and a retail hardware next door. But because those consents were subject to appeal, Judge Borthwick said, well, there's no certainty. We can't say whether they will go ahead and whether they are part of the existing environment or not. Justice Foley agreed that the only sensible approach of Judge Wolfe was to do what she did do, which was to go on ahead as though those consents weren't in place and provided no certainty.
And I clarify that, sorry, my understanding is that Donaldson, do they have 15 approved building platforms?
Pardon?
Do they have 15 approved building platforms?
Can have.
No, do they have?
No, they have one. They have one.
I can't, yeah, because I'm just hearing this, but I can't see how we could possibly take into account
the other 14.
The other 14. I can't think of some way that could ever happen.
There's just no certainty. As it's way too early in the end. There's just no certainty as to what effects might be, what internal effects those 15 might have on each other relative to what might happen over the fence.
So in terms of discussions or agreements that might be reached between Millbrook and them on one hand, that's quite different to what we have to consider as a panel, isn't it?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying, and that's exactly what Justice Foley said in the first Gov's appeal, and it's what also what the High Court Justice Goddard said in the appeal from the Colonial Vineyards, which was the Marlborough case, when she said, well, you know, if there's no certainty, then you've just got to, it's unreliable, and therefore you've got to assess the existing environment, as you see.
It also reminds me of a case in Auckland, I think it was Judge Smith, where fanciful was the word used.
Yeah, yeah. And so you'll see that Mr. Craig's assessment of the effects, the visual effects and landscape effects, for the Donaldsons is based on the one building platform, because that's what he's going to call you.
Isn't that what the series of Hawthorne mistakes cases lead us to? That is what is consented and likely to be given effect to.
Yep.
And the existing environment.
That's right. And the Foodstuffs case, Justice Foley, was just another one of his decisions in that line of those High Court decisions. So that discussion really takes us through to my paragraph 32, where I say, accordingly, the only certainty you have is that the Donaldson component of the existing environment is presently rural land with a single consented but undeveloped building platform that is visually removed from Dalwich land, as per Mr. Crane have both taken that approach. Council and Millbrook are correct, therefore, to treat it as such for the purpose of assessing the fees, as it otherwise would be to rely on future possibility that could not be more uncertain. The project would be contrary to the High Court's finding in the Foodstuffs case, and as you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, the entire combined building case is here. Further, even if you could have regard to a possible proposal for another 14 houses on Donaldson land, the internal effects of such fencing would likely have considerably greater impact in the specific mixed-use development by the revised structure plan. In terms of, so that's what I want to say about the Donaldson submission. In terms of other submitters, I understand that no submitters other than Extra Bay Trust and the Donaldsons wish to be heard in this hearing stream. In any event, Millbrook adopts the evidence of Ms. Evans in respect of the other submissions that have been made and respectfully submits that those submissions have been not accepted. With the exception of Ms. Evans, there is no expert evidence on the merits of the other submissions, and her opinion should be upheld. So in conclusion, I say the basis for rezoning the Dalwich land to Millbrook Resort Zone is made out by the Section 32 assessment. The revised structure plan and revised provisions were developed in direct response to cogent submissions on amenity issues that are able to be sensibly resolved, as set out in the expert evidence of Mr. Craig, Mr. Evans, Ms. Taylor, and Ms. Evans. The purpose and principles of the Act will be met by the revised and rezoning proposal. So, do you see any questions? That is about my submissions, and we'll just move straight through to Mr. Craig on landscape issues. Mm-hmm.
I take it Mr. Edmonds will be talked about. There's a number of matters that were left. We heard from Justin Planner on Tuesday in her paragraph 11. But I take it Mr. Edmonds will deal with that as we go through. They were just the remaining outstanding matters.
Let's hope again. They were discussing those yesterday afternoon when I arrived, so hopefully they're across.
Just on one technical point regarding the amendments, results, and submission, I will give them to legal advice that you may find it just notified. It won't be heard until September, at the earliest. Because it's only to give up steaming and mapping issues.
Oh, then I misunderstood.
That's what I
I'm making some of it. I thought it was to give them standing to
be heard here.
To be heard here in opposition to the proposal for the Douglas Manning. Perhaps I should rethink that in the time that we've got.
I think the reality is you've dealt with the issues anyway. Is any reason why you wouldn't be able to deal with those issues given the nature of the changes sought by Norwalk? I think the plan from the submissions.
Yeah. Well, perhaps it's my initial impression of prejudice is illusory.
I'm trying to avoid as much as possible. Any chance for that?
Of course, no, I respect that. Just on that, isn't your intention that those remapping issues be heard in the month of September?
That's not an intention. It's just that I doubt that it'll be any earlier than me. And I only say that because they all fall within the Waikato Basin.
Yes.
And there has been a planning study undertaken at the Waikato Basin. The council has to understand what the advice is from them. I don't know what it is.
Yes.
And then how it can be dealt with. The rest of the mapping hearings are going to take us to August in any event. So I can't see anything happening there earlier than September, maybe later, depending on the council's conclusion as to how to proceed. If it requires a variation to give effect to the planning study, then that will obviously add time because of the submissions and further submission period to be gone through.
Thank you. It's useful to understand that. Mm-hmm. I feel there are commitments.
Here's Mr. Evans in respect to all the other stuff that this firm has in the basin.
Well, in that case, without any further ado, I'll ask Mr. Craig to summarise his evidence and speak to his official material.
Okay, thank you. We're nearly designing this contemplated from a landscape point of view. The overarching question is there any landscape reasons why it shouldn't be designed, or is there any impediment to the zoning, or anything, or any factor that might influence the shape of all the good zoning?
Could you just move the microphone a little bit closer?
It's
not just me trying to hear it, but also we're trying to record it.
Yes,
so
yeah,
I know
that's right. But did you get that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So my approach is basically twofold. One is the landscape as it is, the existing environment, and I understand that includes consented activity and what might be otherwise committed. And then my second approach is what the district plans are asking for that landscape. Now, by way of background, Baxter Group Landscape Architects, they have undertaken a comprehensive landscape assessment, which I wasn't initially involved in. I peer reviewed it and certainly am satisfied that they've covered everything. also understand that the same is here for the council, which is a conclusion. And I know that she's admitted those studies to her
yes.
So my assessment is that firstly, there's a number of landscape matters that I looked at the site in terms of answering the initial question. The first, of course, is there any part of the landscape, or is the landscape in its entirety especially significant in its current form as a rural landscape? Certainly, it's not subject to any Section 6A or B matters. It's not an outstanding natural landscape or outstanding natural feature. And I do make a distinction between what I call in my evidence that I refer to as significant landscape features and salient landscape features. The significant ones are the ones that are recognised statutorily as those Section 6 landscapes or are otherwise recognised maybe in statutory documents, which sometimes happens outside of that. But there are some salient features in there. They include Mill Creek, and there's a photograph in my graphic attachment of that, which you can see. I'm just referring to the page number there, so page 3, for example. So that's located down on the flat. Between the bridge on which the development had, the proposed development at which farm is going to occur, and between Mountains Road. So we don't take the site as you can see there. So that's one salient feature. Others include there's some quite deeply incised gullies, basically coming in off of what the upper terraces and the upper downs. And also I refer you to my graphic attachment. Page 5 or 7. So essentially that map is showing where these particular features are occurring. Another one is it's quite a steep escarpment that occurs between these upper terraces and the flats alongside Mill Creek. And then the terraces themselves, which will accommodate the proposed residential areas and the golf course and access to them. And then backdropping all of that are some what's labelled on the map as hillocks. And they are quite a prominent feature, and they form, as it suggests, the backdrop, and they contain that site. If you look at perhaps the photo simulation there, there's two of them on the same site, one is the forward development, and the second one is the following development. Maybe look at the one that's following development. And you can see those hills there are quite prominent in the background there, and you can probably just make out the residential areas which are also inserted in that photograph on those other terraces. So that's quite an important natural feature that contains that development, and it also helps to integrate those buildings into this their landscape setting. And they will, of course, be landscaped in and around there. So those are the salient features. The development, and you'll see this on the structure plan, acknowledges those particular features where they are subject to what are labelled as landscape protection areas. And in the case of Mill Creek, the intention is to enhance that with repairing vegetation and such like, and improve its not only the water quality and the scenic quality of the creek, but also the ecological quality as well. It's quite a
quite an important trade spawning. So it's quite, Mill Creek is quite an important trade spawning creek resource.
Yes, oh, absolutely. And if you're familiar with Mill Creek, you're aware that it goes right through the current developments. overall, the existing environment of the moment is that Elbridge Farm is unmistakably rural. It has a couple of buildings on within the site, including the historic Macaulay Cottage. And again, if you look at the structure today, you can see that it has been converted in its own particular area. And then up on the terraces, there's a very small barn which will be converted as part of the Auckland development. So the amenity that's derived from that is it's quite high. It's comes about as a product of the open space and the fact that the site is vegetated, including the pasture grasses as well. Now I should say that with the rezoning and subsequent development, that amenity would be exchanged from by the golf course development. Now, one of the open space, in my view, will remain prevalent. There's a rule or a standard in the plan that requires the open space or site coverage in total to be 5%. So that obviously means that 95% of the entire Millbrook area that comprises open space. Now, I mention this because that suggests to me that if you're looking at, let's say, the urban rural spectrum, the whole of Millbrook, including of close to the Chalbridge Farm, is very much within the rural end of the spectrum. Hasten to that, but we're not trying to create a rural landscape here. But it goes to the fact that the land was being proposed and what exists now is well integrated with the surrounding landscape, which is rural. So another way of putting that is that those rural characteristics infiltrate the site. And the primary characteristic is the openness and the predominance of vegetation. I say maybe as I make this distinction between urban and rural environments, where an urban environment buildings tend to surround space, and rural environments space surrounds buildings. And that currently occurs and will occur on this particular site and in the rest of the building. So from my assessment and that's undertaken by Max Group, in terms of the existing character of the site, which is modified to some extent in the sense that water vegetation is exotic, there's some minor landform modification, and of course the presence of those buildings and various other very minor things like rural pieces and such like. The landscape is going to remain very high for the reasons I've just given. Now, apart from that, there is recognition in the proposal as well that while this is represents an expansion of the public resort zone, there is acknowledgement that there are some differences over there. The site is relative to the rest of the zone elevated. And of course, it does incorporate those salient landscape features I mentioned earlier. So, the recognition of that, the location of residential areas has been carefully thought through. The access to them is designed in such a way to minimize any superficial effects. And you'll see, I think, the access will follow a formed existing farm road. See how that works in terms of maintaining what I might call a light profile in the landscape. and of course there won't be any overhead services or anything like that. In terms of the design guides and post and plan standards, there will be a requirement for the buildings to be finished in darker colours compared to what exists in Millbrook currently. And also there's a requirement that is the vegetation is predominantly indigenous. And you can see the effect again if you look at that photo simulation, which is in fact was like fairly built just behind Marika.
That's public viewpoint.
Where's the entry to that?
Sorry?
Where is the entry?
Behind the cemetery.
Is that where it is? I wondered.
It's quite hard to find, so to my view, it's not a significant public advantage point in the sense that you wouldn't expect tourists to reach there. It's something that's really just known to the locals. And if you get time to walk up the track, it's a bit overgrown. But it certainly does provide us very good amount of light. So you can see from that how those the residences are a bit dark than the existing ones. You can see the result of that in terms of how they blend in. And another way of putting it, so they don't stand out as much as the others. And of course, that will be enhanced by the landscaping that's proposed. The landscaping itself will be, there will be some variation because inside, of course, you've got that one end of the spectrum, the quite manicured appearance of the golf courses themselves and the greens. And then there will be amenity and landscaping in and around the residences. And then there are these landscape protection areas, which will comprise largely sort of rubber pasture land, for want of a better description. So the visual effects that will arise from the presence of the buildings and the vegetation patterns. The patterns themselves will be natural, trying to avoid straight line effects that you might get in the shoulder belts and edges and such like. And the landscaping will also reflect that variation in landform and those salient features that I just described earlier. So as a result of that, I'm certainly of the view that the view quality will be very high. Buildings will certainly not be dominant in any way. The open space, the natural contour of the land will continue to prevail and be appreciable from all of these advantages. I have, of course, looked at maybe go to my record attachment. Page 6, River Rage. So that light blue dashed line represents what I consider the received environment in terms of potential visual effects. And in some ways it's a little bit theoretical, but once you get out there, you understand that the extent of that. Doesn't mean to say that the rezoning or and subsequent development would be invisible from further afield. I have been up currently in Peak, for instance, and you can see the whole Millbrook from there. And likewise, the Remarkables and Tobin's Trap, which are not further afield from these areas. But that dashed line, to my mind, represents is so the envelope in which potentially adverse effects might occur. But they're not otherwise avoided, remedied, or mitigated. And beyond that, the distance is so great that basically the effects are trivial. So, and it's within that envelope that we've taken the place simulations, which I think it might be a good opportunity to just have a look at the other two photo simulations, because as part of that, try to identify what are the most significant advantage points that, or let's say representative advantage points. So you've seen the one from Philly Hill, within the viewpoint two, which is from Nulligan's Road. And it's almost the case of asking where's Willie. And in the second paragraph, the only indication that of you know, any form of development, you just see the two gable ends there. In this photograph, just from this little saddle here. And as Mr. Ford pointed out, in the preparation of these photo simulations, they are surveyed, so they're very accurate presentations of what actually is invisible.
I thank you for those.
Yeah.
I hope to see more of them.
Yeah. So we can, confidently rely on the images and what they're portraying here and the effects. Yes. And then we've got the. So that's Mellington's Road, and then the final photo simulations are from Arrowtown on Hayes Road. It's a very good sort of overview of the land, which I'm not sure what this is. And you actually can't really see any hillock at all from that all port post development. You can probably just see there in the photograph the little background hillocks. So that'll orientate you as to where the development is occurring, just to the right of those. So people compare the photo simulations through the survey information that they rely on and the datums that have been provided with. They can accurately locate the position of the buildings, their heights and so forth. And when we select these photo simulations, we don't know what we're going to see in the photo simulations until we get the photo simulation. So this tells me that we can't actually see anything.
I presume this is part of the outcome of the response to the X-ray Trust submission, because presumably in the original position they might have been visible. So I presume in the, if they were cited as they were originally proposed to be cited prior to the X-ray Trust discussions, they might have been visible.
Yes, and what happened too is that there were erected poles to the correct height at the highest point of the resonances to the gable ends. So it was relatively simple matter to get some idea of what could be seen from the neighbouring properties and indeed from publicly accessible vantage points.
And when you talk about those little lumpy hills there, aren't you to the right, left, big green, the long left? Is that where we're supposed to be looking?
Yes.
You've got a green hill here, and then you've got these little ones.
Yeah, those little ones there.
There's a building site immediately in front of those X-ray Trust.
You can see it in the photograph of the building site.
Right.
Yeah.
The only real difference is the removal of pine trees. It's this one on there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so that's part of the site enhancement. And there is a fairly prominent hedge row, mature commoners, that will be removed. So, as is evident from the structure plan, any future planting is going to be much more naturalistic rather than reflect pedestrian or shelter boundaries and such like.
You've also provided us with a view from the X-ray Trust building platform.
Yes.
You probably didn't realise that before we had.
Yeah, well, that's right. So this is what's on here. So that's showing the difference before and after effects. So you can't see any buildings here, but you can see the golf greens. Just to point it out, probably just to pick it up, it's too far away for you to see here. You might just spot the chimney.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Tiny little white one.
In terms of the treatment, you might recall from the structure plan that there is mounding between the truck property and the price residential areas. And part that's going to facilitate is that management of visual effects, but also anything like that has to be contribute to the integration of development into the landscape. And I'll come to that when I talk about the objectives and policies. So I put quite a lot of emphasis on that. So it's accepted, particularly if you go back to that simulation from Felix Hill, and that the site will be visible, but I'm very confident that through the mechanisms of the structure plan, the combined mechanisms of the structure plan, the design guidelines and the district plan standards, that the development's going to be very, very well integrated with the landscape of its city. It's certainly not going to be a dominant in any way at all. Also, those particular provisions ensure very good design outcomes. And we can see those currently in Hillbrook. They ensure that the building design is very good. They also ensure that the building design is consistent across the site. And certainly from a landscape point of view, that's a very desirable thing. It's to avoid any sense of fragmentation where you're introducing, say, foreign elements in a landscape like this. Again, you'll notice in the Fairy Hill view, 3.1, that the landform in which Millbrook is located is quite uniform up through and including that carbon damage. So there's going to be a strong sense of coherence going throughout that entire landform. And also, based on my observation, what's occurred in Millbrook is a very high level of maintenance. So even though the rural, even though the site retains to quite a large extent that generic amenity that's derived from a rural environment, namely the open space and vegetation, which will still be prevalent in the development of this site, the amenity is going to be equally high in terms of what you could expect from a resort development such as this, that is derived from design of the buildings, the infrastructure, and the grounds that surrounds them. So it's, in a way, it's kind of exchanging one amenity for the other of equal importance, or you know, to an equal degree. And the same applies for the change of character as well.
I'm going to take it that the, as you commented earlier on, that the colour palette for the buildings in the Dalgish area is going to be much more dark and recessive. Had they been the same as with the existing Millbrook, I take it they might have been significantly more obvious.
Yes, they would. In fact, when they compared the photo simulation, which we did actually show the buildings, it's quite nice. Not aligning with what the rule of the design guidelines are seeking, so I've got to adjust that more accurately to reflect what's going on. But when I saw that, I thought, I should step me up a bit. Anyway. So that's, let's say, the first level of assessment. The second is, as I said earlier on, is what is it that the objectives and policies are seeking in terms of the landscape outcomes and the delivery of good quality amenity. There's quite a few of them. So I'll just very, very, without actually referring to the actual objectives and policies, since I've done some of my evidence, I'll just summarise what they're seeking to do in no particular order. So they seek firstly to minimise the effects of development landscape. And I've just explained how Millbrook intends to do that. They seek to ensure that development, or the landscape is capable of absorbing change. And also described that as, you know, note in the facts that right, this landscape is based on a moderate ability to absorb change. The opposite poles also seem to preserve the natural character, and with a particular emphasis on the ONL's Section 6 matters. And they want development to be logical in terms of where it goes. And you might recall I just said a little bit earlier that this is contiguous landform, so the relationship to the landform remains much the same. But also, the development is contiguous with existing Millbrook environment in any case. So it's not a separated, isolated development. It's related to what is being exhibited in the existing environment. So to my mind, it's quite logical, and also facilitating that is the fact that it's quite well contained by these natural features that it's the escarpment back upon the ellipse. And of course, you've got tenure containment as well. The policies also ask that heritage features or landscapes are recognised, and of course that is the case with McCauley Cottage. And as I mentioned earlier, that's recognised on the structure plan. Then they talk about cumulative effects being avoided. And I think if I recall right, there's two policies about this. One is very general, and with any development, you don't have cumulative effect. And the question is whether that cumulative effect is an adverse one, because you can have cumulative effects that are quite positive. Say, for example, if you need to be further enhancing the landscape and you introduce further enhancement, then that's a positive cumulative effect. But then there's a further policy that actually identifies what some of these adverse effects might be. One is avoiding urban sprawl alongside highways and such like. And of course, this is certainly not the case in the world. The objectives of policies also recognise that tourist development is going to inform the environment in and around the Whakatipu Basin and within the Queenstown Lakes generally. And so what that does in terms of expectation is that it informs what people might expect to occur in this landscape. So another way of putting it is the question of would people be surprised to see this here? And for the reasons I've already outlined, said in my view that they would not. It's not contrary to what they expected to occur. And then the policies ask that the effects of infrastructure are minimised, and I've explained to you that there will be no overhead services. You can see what's kind of affected in the existing built environment now. So I think they've satisfactorily achieved that. In this very sort of general policy that talks about an objective, it talks about avoiding degradation of the landscape. And that goes to how well development is integrated with the landscape, acknowledges the character and form of the landscape, and the structure plan certainly illustrates how that response is being what's going to be implemented. Then there's a policy that talks about mitigation effects, and it recognises that potentially these effects alone can generate this effect. So, for example, if somebody were to put in vegetative screening in the form of like a hedge or a shoulder cut, that might be at odds with the natural character of the environment, that could contribute an adverse mitigation effect. So the plan is just asking that we recognise that potentially, while mitigation effects their purpose is to try and minimise adverse effects, they can in themselves generate adverse effect. It's relevant here because there might be questions over some of the submitters who potentially seek to screen some of the development in a way that's quite formal. It doesn't mean to say you can't do it, but you can do it in a much more sort of naturalistic way. And it's the same too from alongside the road. There's another policy that says that they prefer that show belts, edges, and that sort of thing on established alongside roads. Because what the plan seeks is the maintenance of the open source particular landscape. And how Millbrook is responding to that is going through the structure plan where preferences for planting to be much more formal. There's going to be an element of transparency through the site, not only to maintain views but also to achieve, I'm sure you're familiar with safety principles. And it's also better aligned with what the direction of the plan is seeking in terms of the landscape development in the area. And so, and then finally, the policy regarding the protection of views from my reading of the policy, significant advantage points. So this is going back to these advantage points we showed in the photo simulations. And I understand that those advantage points are necessarily publicly accessible as opposed to what might affect the views from local properties. So I think that's probably concludes everything I'm going to say. So if you can answer any questions.
Only one remaining one I might be resolved in the discussions was then had with the officers, but I assume agreement has been reached. There may have been a misunderstanding about screening on Mallahan's Road. I think in your evidence base what you just reiterated is that what you're really looking for is like copses almost. So it's intermittent things. And if you look hard you might glimpse at one, but that's not necessarily disastrous in itself, that's fine. The only concern I have is that the plan possibly needs to show where those copses are, perhaps plot them on in the form of little circles or blobs or something like that. Which can become very clear to us in the hearings we're having on Jack's point that structure plans can be, well, we're thinking of somebody who's administering them, and unless it's clear where things are, it can lead to debates and arguments at a later stage. So I think that would be desirable.
Yeah, I think that's easily done. I recall, and sorry I didn't cover it, in terms of the council's landscape architect, my understanding now that she was concerned that planting alongside and running the road should be retained, and I think Wilbrook is in agreement with the principle of that. One of the issues there was that some uncertainty as to where that planting is, some, you know, in terms of where it is in relation to legal road. It looks to me on the face of it as to which chunk of it's within the legal road. But what you're suggesting is that if we can plot, you know, the existing where it's trees are, then that can inform future development and management of those areas.
Thank you. Thank you. I suppose the only real question is that you say in the conclusions in the statement that section 6A doesn't apply, but I thought from your discussion that in fact the proposal is to give some recognition to the natural character of the Mill Spring.
Yes.
So that there's in fact, Mr. Edwards can just address us as whether that is explicit in the structure plans of that.
Yes. Now I understand what you're saying. As a waterway.
Yes.
I'm not sure whether it's recognised as section 6A waterway.
Well, that's, it is. And the definition of river includes anything that has water flowing on it at some stage,
okay.
As long as it's natural.
Yep.
So it's caught in that sense. And the only question is how far the margins go.
And it's certainly going to be enhanced, but it's going to be much improved.
And if I can say this, that the contrast between the stream that flows through this deletion and the as it flows through Millbrook is in marked contrast, because the enhancement work that's been done on the Millbrook site will be with the removal of overgrown willows or dead willows and an improvement of bright area in the front planting. And I understand that the water quality and ecology has improved as a result of this program, and may be able to speak to that.
Yes, so the image that you've seen in Mr. Craig's evidence through Mill Farm shows that the stream is very straight line, and it was used to be that way through Millbrook prior to development. It had been basically a cut channel to drain the farm swamp many years ago, so it was very much a dead straight line. With the development we did back in 2007, 2008, we have returned the stream back to its original old meandering stream bed. And so right back, every time we have a large flood or a large rainfall, go straight down there, clean every fish and everything out in, and shoot it straight down the waterfall. Now it's really much slowed down, meandering through wetlands and things. So that is the kind of enhancements that we will see to continue along with the willow removal that were done on the Millbrook's current development.
Can I just add something to what you mentioned with regard to the Donaldson submission? I've been on the site that we went to this morning with Mr. O'Malley, and I can confirm that you cannot see the WHR on that site. This is the approved building site.
So that brings us to Mr. Edmonds, who's going to bring you up to date with the floor. Where the planners have got to, and proposed provisions, and hopefully we can do that in a comprehensive and coordinated way.
Precise
rather than organic.
Right, over to you. Okay. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning,
Mr. Chair. We have, as Mr. Gordon pointed out, witnesses have been conferencing over the last couple of days by telephone and in person. We haven't got to the point of a witness statement, joint statement just yet. We've drafted one, but because everything's a little bit fluid, we haven't quite finished. But we do intend to have that figure by the time we get
reply from the council.
Do you
have something to hand up now?
Well, I can.
I was just wondering, you
know, probably
three copies of something.
What I've called is, for simplicity, Google 3, which is my latest version, which is an update of the version of provisions that were attached to my evidence that you have.
Yes.
And they do reflect the agreements that we've reached with the other witnesses today. Just to confirm, Ms. Evans is going to prepare a track change version, replicate what I'm about to promote here as a clean version. So we are producing the same document, but hers is a track change of the 4 week available version. Well, mine is a clean version, which may just assist with reading.
Would it help you if you would hand it up now and we drop the adjournment and we could just compare it against the other one? Because I've written some questions on the other one and they may be answered. We'll adjourn for 30 minutes, so they're going to stay in the same depth of
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.